Sir Gabriel program. You are cleared for departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
This is your 50,000-watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for college football fans already experiencing withdrawal. 940 ESPN, 940 ESPN, Fresno.com. Your two-hour national championship preview, we'll call it that, begins right now. 6 minutes, 18 seconds past the hour of 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Glad to have you aboard. From San Jose, we are in downtown San Jose, 4.1 miles away from Levi's Stadium, where Clemson and Alabama will get it going tonight for all the marbles. Dabo Sweeney trying to make a bigger name for himself and the Clemson football program going up against the mothership of college football right now, Alabama and Nick Saban. They're going for their sixth title. I'm Christopher Gabriel, host of the program. Glad to have you aboard. Joined, as always, by the man himself, technical director, producer, hockey guy, Giants fan, bachelorette and bachelor, they're talking about the shows, expert Russ, back at Mission Control, keeping us going in the right direction. I'm joined here by our national championship on-site producer and promotions director, Vivian, who has been a tremendous help. On the program today, we're going to give you a potpourri of a whole bunch of stuff that goes back to Saturday, from Media Day, where I had a chance to have a back and forth with three individuals. We'll give you a couple of minutes with each one of them. Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, Tua Tagovailoa, of course, the great quarterback from Alabama. Also had a chance to catch up with ESPN sideline reporter extraordinaire Holly Rowe. We'll give you some of that. Today, here on Audio Avenue, which right now it's a barren quiet avenue because everybody is off to the stadium, which is where we'll be a little bit later on. I sat down with some pretty cool people. You're going to hear all of those interviews in a little while as well. I had a chance to speak with the man who is calling the game for ESPN Radio tonight, Sean McDonough, certainly one of the giants in broadcasting. Syracuse alum like our own Paul Leffler. Also spoke to the 2005 NFL Most Valuable Player and one of the greatest players to ever come out of the University of Alabama, Sean Alexander. Also spoke with one of the greatest players to ever come out of Notre Dame, Rocket Ishmael. That was fun. It was kind of fun having an SC and Notre Dame guy at one table having at it about college football, and I put some video up. He's just, both him and Sean, both Sean's, just great, really engaging and entertaining in their own way. Bonnie Bernstein, long time sideline reporter. You've seen her doing all kinds of different things for CBS and NFL over the years. I spoke with Bonnie, and I also spoke with Brian Clark, who is the coach of the year, the coach of the year for the Eddie Robinson coach of the year out of the University of Alabama, Birmingham. And that was that was a lot of fun. We're also going to talk with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN, National College Football Insider. He is Adam is down at the coaches convention in San Antonio. We'll catch up with him. And then Brian Richardson will join us. Brian Richardson, you may recall, he was one of the Bowlmageddon guys. They had plans on going to 18 bowls in 22 days. From what I've been able to ascertain, they've done that, or they got close to that, but they certainly experienced some hurdles along the way. Before we jump into some sound for you, a couple of things I wanted to throw your way. Interesting what Paul Leffler was saying a little bit earlier with Tony D, talking about one of the things that jumps out about you with Tua Tagovailoa and Trevor Lawrence in particular is how they carry themselves. the fact that I had a chance to go one-on-one with both of them, Paul couldn't be more correct. They both were so poised, just really engaging. They gave you nuance. They gave you depth. They were just terrific. And that was the impression that I got talking. I didn't interview every single player that I ran into, but we had the entire squads from Clemson. First it was Alabama for an hour, half hour delay, you know, in between them, and then Clemson came out and had a chance to talk with a lot of members from both the Crimson Tide and the Tigers. And clearly these young men are mentored extremely well from Nick Saban and from Dabo Swinney. You just had a vibe from all of them that when somebody would sit down and talk with them, and they were talking with so many people from print, from broadcast, either radio or television, they were talking to tons, I mean, dozens and dozens. But you got the impression that they really had been schooled up very well on exactly how to comport themselves. The other thing I found interesting was what Jackson said to Tony, saying that right now at Levi's Stadium, he is seeing Orange or Clemson fans outnumbering the Crimson Tide. What's interesting is that on media day, it was the Alabama fans that probably outnumbered Clemson fans, not quite 2-1, but it was close to that. When you had the Alabama fans in there, the entire side of SAP Center, where the San Jose Sharks play, was filled up with Bama fans. When they left and Clemson's fans came in, and so there were some Alabama fans that still stayed around, you really had a clear difference in the amount of fans. So it'll be an interesting night to see exactly how many both Bama and Clemson fans are in Levi's Stadium. For that matter, it's going to be interesting to see how many fans are in the stadium, period, because there really has not been any kind of great buzz going on here, at least in the time that I was here. Excuse me, it's Bill Clark. I said Brian Clark, for heaven's sakes. It's Bill Clark, UAB coach, who had a tremendous year. I believe it was 11-3, a football program at UAB that there was no football program a couple of years ago, and here they are a couple of years later doing not even a turnaround. It was basically starting the program from scratch. You'll hear what Bill has to say in a couple of minutes. I want to start you off with Media Day and my chance to have a couple of minutes of Nick Saban time. You know, one of the topics that we debate on my program all the time is the playoffs, the college football playoff. Well, I had my chance, and here's what Coach Saban had to say.
Coach, you said that you are happy with where the college football playoff is right now, four teams. There are some others, Brian Kelly among them, who says there's an appetite for this to grow beyond four. Why do you believe four is the good number? And if it goes to eight or more, how does that affect you and the University of Alabama?
Well, you know, my view is from 1,000 feet. How does it affect college football? Not how it affects Alabama, or not really even whether four is the right number. I think when we had two, there was a lot of speculation all the time about was there another team that should have been one of those teams. I think since we've gotten to four, I think in most cases the best teams have always been in the playoffs. They may not have been ranked exactly 1, 2, 3, 4, but the committee has gotten the best teams, you know, in the playoffs. There's always been speculation as to somebody else should have gotten in, but there's speculation in the basketball tournament. They have 68 teams, and then they have a two-hour show on the teams that got in or didn't get in or whatever. So I don't care if we have 68 teams in the playoffs, you're going to have that. So as long as you get the best teams in the playoff, I think that's fine. I think my issue and concern is there's been a unique bowl games have made college experiences unique for a lot of student athletes, programs, teams over the years. And I think the bigger the playoffs become, the less significance bowl games have. I said that when we started the playoff. I said it when we expanded the playoff last time. And it's true. You know, there's players that aren't playing in bowl games. I mean, playing in the Sugar Bowl used to be a big thing. Used to be a really big thing. Playing in the Cotton Bowl, that was a big thing. Playing in the Orange Bowl, that was a really big thing. Playing in the Rose Bowl, because I coached in the Big Ten for a long time, that was huge. It was huge. Now we have players that choose not to play in those games because they're not in the playoffs. All right, so is that good for college football? I don't know. I mean, it's for everybody to answer for themselves. From a media standpoint, because there's so much attention on the playoffs, I can see why a lot of people in the media would like to see the playoffs expand. But there is an expense to that, and that's you minimize the importance of bowl games for a lot of players who had successful seasons. That used to be the unique thing about college football, is a lot of people got a lot of positive self-gratification for having a good season by going to a bowl game and getting rewarded to play another game against another good team.
I thought it was a wonderful answer. Coach Saban gave so much depth. He gave so much nuance. I really wasn't expecting him to go on for almost 3 minutes, but he did, and it was much appreciated. And I think he makes fair points. The fact of the matter is, for me, I simply don't agree. I think that we are going to see it go to eight. And he is right. He is right. There is an expense to that. But the expense that Coach Saban is talking about, I think the benefits. Let's put it in terms that that follow what he said. I think it may be cost effective in terms of expanding the playoffs. In other words, there's going to be a cost involved, but the payoff is going to be much greater for fans, for coaches, for players, from universities, the payouts that they get, and so on. But it was a great answer. I mean, it was a great answer from Coach Saban. To follow up with one coach, let's go to another coach in the same state, about a half an hour to 40 minutes away from him, and that is the University of Alabama at Birmingham, the UAB Blazers coach, Bill Clark. He was the Eddie Robinson Coach of the Year, and what a job that he did. How did he take a program that wasn't a program for a couple of years and suddenly turn them into a conference champion? Coach Clark stopped by our broadcast location a little bit earlier this morning.
I'm with the head coach of the University of Alabama, Birmingham, UAB, the Blazers, Bill Clark. Thanks for taking some time to join us today, sir.
Glad to. Thanks for having me.
You have done an unbelievable job at a program that wasn't even existing a couple of years ago. It had shut down for a bit. When you first brought the program back, what was your first order of business? Because it is a huge undertaking, is it not?
Yeah, so we, you know, two things. One, we had to go find players, and two, we had to really work on our facilities, and it was kind of like chicken or egg, you know, which one comes first? You know, do we need the facilities, you know, to get the players or the players to go help raise money? But, you know, we were kind of in the midst of trying to do both, and, you know, we've raised $50 million and built a brand-new facility. We've got a new stadium coming in our city.
Beautiful. I've seen the plan.
All
kind of
great
gorgeous.
Things going on.
So when you started to go after players, how were you, forgive the word selling, how were you selling them on UAB? You're in a state with the Crimson Tide on one side, with Auburn on the other side. You're a program, you're a conference that isn't the SEC, but they play great football in your conference. What was the pitch?
Well, you know, the funny thing we tell now is who was going to play you in the movie. You know, I mean, it was, you know, a program brought back from the dead. Obviously, we had playing time to sell. And, you know, one of the things that I decided early on was that we were going to really go out and try and get a bunch of junior college players. We couldn't go with high school guys. The one thing the NCAA gave us was a clock that would freeze for that 1 year. Now, they didn't give us really anything else. But what that allowed was for these junior college guys, a lot of them were hurt. You know, you had some torn labrums, you had some knees, you had some of those things, or to get academically well. So that was my selling point. Hey, sit out for a year, get yourself well to go. We need you to come in and start. And then, of course, somebody's going to be playing your role in the movie, so let's go make some history.
My guest is the head coach of Alabama, became a UAB, Bill Clark. Let me give you a parallel. I lived in New York City for a long time, and in hockey, the New York Rangers own that area.
Right.
Go a little bit east, you have the New York Islanders who play in Brooklyn right now, but they played for years in Long Island. They won a lot of cups. The New Jersey Devils come along, and they try to find their own niche. So you have a similar situation in the state of Alabama, in Birmingham. How does you have your fan base? How does UAB go about broadening that fan base and being appealing to the masses?
Yeah, I think the key for me is I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. So, you know, you've got the economic center of the state of Alabama. You've got also, and I think this was 17 or 18 straight years per capita, we're the number one college football market in the country by a pretty good wide stretch. So what you got is a city that loves college football. They're looking for things to do. We've got the number one young university as rated, you know, this summer in the country. So you've got a medical school. You know, you got all these good things going in Birmingham, Alabama, who loves football, and we just needed to make an investment.
We're the flagship station for Fresno State.
Right.
So we had an eye on you because Jeff Tedford came in and did a couple of years ago and did an unbelievable job.
Correct.
Turned everything around. with the year that you had this year, winning the conference, one of the Coach of the Year awards that you won, congratulations for that. What have you seen in the way of interest from players and interest from fans? Has it gone up exponentially after this season?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Now, our fans turned out. We hit in 14. We had the second biggest turnaround in the country. So they were just looking for a good product, I think, to be put on the field. We led our conference in attendance last year. I think we were one or two this year. So our fans have come out, and I think putting a good product on the field was where it starts. But we're in a place that loves college football. So I think if we can put a good product out there, they're going to support it.
And the other thing is the conference that you're in, this is a question that comes up out at Fresno State all the time, and Jeff Tedford just kind of pushes it aside because very happy to be in the Mountain West. Are you happy right now where you're at, looking down the road 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Any thought of moving in a different direction?
You talking about just UAB?
UAB, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think we, you know, Conference USA has been great to us. You know, we had 4-2. We had the best record of all the other conferences in the bowl matchup. So, you know, it's a good fit for us, and, you know, we'll see what the future holds. But Conference USA has been really good to UAB.
You're the only conference so far that's two games above 500. Everybody else is one game or even or below.
Right. We had the best record this year, and I think out of the last 6 years, I think three or four times we've had the best record. So we've got a really good conference, very competitive, good coaches. So we're in a good spot.
Last thing for you, Coach. Now that you have this great year, 10-2 you finished?
11-2.
11-3. 11-3. Okay. You've raised everybody's expectations. You have this beautiful new facility right. That's coming in. What's the biggest challenge going forward? Is it expectations or something else?
You know, I think for us is continuing to raise the bar. You know, what do we do next? You know, we got another grass practice field to build. We need to build a nutrition center. So I'm looking to the future and saying, all right, you know, if we really want to be at this national team I've talked about, we've got to continue to take steps and we've got to continue to have success.
Head coach of UAB, the Blazers, Bill Clark, Coach of the Year. Great to meet you, sir.
Thank you. Same here.
That was fun stuff. What a name he has made for himself. The facility that they're going to be building in downtown Birmingham is absolutely gorgeous. It's a smaller stadium, as you would imagine. They're playing in Legion Field right now, the longtime home of the Alabama Crimson Tide. The Tide played very few games on campus back then. And, of course, the Alabama-Auburn game for decades was played in Legion Field, and finally Auburn stepped up and said, we're tired of this because this is largely a Bama crowd. We want to play in Jordan-Hare Stadium. They did, and a good move by UAB. What a great coach he is. Coming up, the next segment you're going to hear, comments from Dabo Swinney, head coach at Clemson, and the great quarterback at the University of Alabama, Tua Tagovailoa. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program live from the National Championship.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
CGP Live from Audio Avenue, downtown San Jose. We are 4.1 miles. We want to be exact here. From Levi's Stadium, where the national championship game will kick off somewhere around 5:15, 5:20. Alabama Crimson Tide and the Clemson Tigers. Glad to have you aboard with us this afternoon. All right, so Media Day, as I mentioned, was Saturday, and that's what you heard. You heard some audio from Nick Saban. The first hour of Media Day was Alabama. You had, with each team, with Alabama and with Clemson, you had Coach Saban, you had a couple of assistant coaches, and you had four players highlighted, and then you had the rest of the players in designated areas for offense, defense, and so on. And you could go and talk with anybody. You could sit down at an entire table with the whole defensive line of Bama or Clemson if you wanted to. And these events are great for content. It's content overload if you want it to be. It's controlled chaos. It's fun chaos. It's a great place to be if you're a college football fan. Well, Tua Tagovailoa. We'll start with Dabo Swinney, actually. Dabo Swinney, had a chance to get in front of him. He had just gotten done doing an imitation of Stephen A. Smith, which I put up on Instagram as well as on Twitter. He looked like he was asleep on his feet. But the thing about Dabo Swinney is that, again, much like Nick Saban, but in a different way, he gives you great content. He's engaging. He's entertaining. And he makes such an effort to connect with everybody who's asking him a question. So I had a chance to ask him about preparing for the Crimson Tide.
What does it do to your preparation when you have two individuals, Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts, that you have to prepare for? Does it add more complexity, or the fact that you know them so well, is it just standard operating procedure?
Yeah, standard operating procedure. I mean, we're very familiar with Alabama. same bat channel, same, you know, different bat day, I guess, bat time or whatever. It's, I mean, they're phenomenal on defense. It's no different. I mean, you just turn the page, you know, whatever year, they're great on defense. You can pick little things here or there. They're great on defense. They're built in the trenches. The biggest difference for them this year is just the explosiveness on offense. I mean, this is by far the best version of them we've seen offensively. I mean, it's unbelievable. And we're a lot alike. Dynamic quarterbacks, explosive skill, explosive run game, you know, built through the run game and the play action and those type of things. So we're very similar in that way. But for us, you know, we have a great understanding of who they are. But you got to stop it. I mean, they're not going to come in here and do something that they don't do. It's just stopping it is it's a challenge. So, and as it has been for other people with us. I mean, we've been two really difficult teams to handle offensively. But, yeah, they've got, I mean, they got two thoroughbreds at quarterback. You know, and obviously Jalen Hurts is a great player. And he you know, what you saw in the SEC championship game, I mean, he won the game. He made three throws that, you know, very few people make. And he made them under pressure with tight coverage. And he created to make a couple of those plays. So it's a big challenge, you know, for sure. But, you know, we just got to focus on what we got to do to stop what they do, regardless of who's playing quarterback.
One of the things that Coach Sweeney also made the point about, and he was pretty emphatic, is that he was asked repeatedly, but in different ways, are you at the level of Alabama? And he touched on it a little bit there, kind of connecting the dots. But what he said in various ways was, look, we have a program that is the stature of Alabama. We have the kind of talent that Alabama has. We have the recruiting ability that Alabama has, but we've got to win a few of these. We can't just live on the same block and expect to be considered, you know, just as nice a house as their house is. And his point was well taken. So you heard him talking about Jalen Hurts and the quarterback situation, Tua Tagovailoa. Well, I found my way a little bit earlier over to Tua Tagovailoa and had a chance to ask him about his relationship with Jalen Hurts. Well, actually, we talked about a couple of things, but what you're going to hear here has to do with expectations.
All of us look at the University of Alabama, and we see you and your program a certain way. Fans do, media does. From the inside, what is the hardest part about playing at Alabama? Is it the expectations? Is it the demands from Coach Saban? What exactly is it?
Standard over feelings. You know, no matter what you're feeling, you got to live up. You got to perform to the standard. You got to do everything the way it's supposed to be done. And that's why Coach Saban harps a lot about trusting the process, because it is a process. We don't get to where we're at right now because, you know, we prayed for it, we wished for it. You know, it's everything. There's a process towards everything. If you want to be successful in life, there's a process towards it. If you want to be a good football player, there's a process towards it. So for us all being here, you know, it's just a testament to the team buying into not only the process, but buying into the principles and values of the organization.
Yeah, it was pretty clear what he was saying. And you heard that from a number of the other Alabama players, certainly the ones that I talked to. I talked to about probably close to a dozen of them. They kept talking about, exactly what Tua said, standard over feelings. So it sounds like it's a message that is preached quite a bit by Coach Saban and his staff. All right, we're going to pivot here, and we're going to bring in, coming up next, we're going to talk with Brian Richardson. He is one of the individuals behind Bowlmageddon. Bowlmageddon. We talked to Brian before they went on their big bowl journey. Their goal was 18 bowls in 22 days. They're in the area tonight. How do they do? He'll tell you next on the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Working our way through the two-hour tour today instead of three because we have a little bit of business, the national championship game, 4.1 miles away from us, Levi's Stadium, Clemson, Alabama. CG here at Audio Avenue. Just myself, promotions goddess, on-site producer Vivian, and a couple of cool security guards hanging out with us, making sure that nobody comes charging through here. And really, there's nobody here right now except the three of us. Well, prior to bowl season, I had a chance to talk with Brian Richardson. He and a group of former Southern California USC alums decided to try and go to 18 bowl games, including one internationally in the Bahamas, in 22 days and set a Guinness World Record. It started on December 15th, ironically enough, the same day that Fresno State and Arizona State were in the Las Vegas Bowl. None of us took it personally. The fact that they didn't come to Fresno, of course, it would have been difficult to get to the other bowls that they went to on that day in the Southeast. But I told Brian it was such a cool thing that they were planning. Once the journey was over, or at least the last day of the journey here at the national championship game, I wanted Brian to come on with me, and he is doing that right now. Mr. Richardson, Happy New Year to you. Welcome back.
Happy New Year, Christopher. Thanks for having me on.
All right, where are you right now? Are you in one of the tailgating areas? Are you inside the stadium? Are you en route?
Yeah.
Are you on the Trojan private jet? Where are you?
We're at the All-State Championship tailgate. I just had to walk out there because it was so loud inside. I'm kind of in the back lot here, so it's a little quieter. But yeah, it's Keith Urban's playing here in the background, and there is a ton of fans here. Certainly, the most that we've seen at any bowl game we've been to.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did the first day go? Did you make it to everything? And if so, did you have any hiccups on the way?
Well, so yeah, the first day was the toughest with the three bowls in one day. Scott, our driver, drove about 109 miles an hour to get to the New Orleans Bowl, which was the third one in that first day. And we all thought Bowlmageddon was going to be cut short to just one day. But fortunately, we did make it. We had a couple that we couldn't attend because of weather, which we knew might happen. The Bahamas Bowl had a storm coming through at that same time, so we could not make that one. And then there was one in Texas, I think, that was either the next day, I believe it was the next day, that was canceled for weather too. So we've forced through it, and we've had a great time, and it's appropriate that I'm talking to you at this bowl game because you were the first one that we talked to on that first day, so we appreciate that.
Well, we listen. That's cool to hear, but we appreciate you taking time. I mean, you're at the big All-State party, and it sounds like a blast. We're going to be over there, not at the party, but we'll be at the stadium right when the program is over. The second bowl, are you talking about the one, the Boise State Boston College one, the First Responder Bowl?
Yes. Yeah.
That's okay.
First, well,
yeah,
actually, we did attend that one.
Oh, you did. Okay, you got to. Okay.
Yeah,
all
right. We attended that. We were on the field. We took some pictures. So that does count as one of the bowls. I just can't remember. All the bowls kind of stick together right now. People ask me about, do you remember who played in this one?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, let me think about it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've been wondering about as you've been on this journey is you went to some bowls that were a little larger and some other bowls that were a little smaller in stature, not small for the teams or the fan bases involved, but relatively speaking, some that just weren't at the level as others. Which ones stuck out for you? Was it the bigger ones or the smaller, more intimate ones?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I really love the smaller bowls, to be honest with you. I've been to some of the bigger bowls, you know, like I said, in the Pete Carroll era, you know, we were going to Rose Bowls and national championships and been to a lot of those, but going to like, you know, a Camellia Bowl in Alabama, in Montgomery, you know, some of these smaller bowls, the Boca Raton Bowl, was a smaller bowl, but you know, Florida really knows how to put on a bowl. I mean, they really, had a fantastic, bowl there in Boca Raton. So I would say just seeing the fans, you know, in these games, you know, what we learned is they're not selling a lot of tickets, especially these early games. I mean, you know, God, the First Responder Bowl, even before the Lightning came, they literally had like 1,000 fans there. Christopher. I mean, it was
wow.
It was kind of depressing. Yeah, so you just you got to appreciate the fact that these smaller schools, man, they're getting out there and they love their teams just as much as the Clemsons and the Alabamas.
We're talking with Brian Richardson. He is one of a band of, I'm not going to call them vagabonds, but rather trailblazers, guys that decided to head out on the road and do what baseball fans often do in the summer. When fans go up to the Northeast and they'll go to Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park and Citizens Bank Field in Philadelphia, they went on a bowl adventure. Did you find as you were going, you know, as your trip was progressing, that people in sites that you were about to get to were starting to get word about you and people wanted to meet you guys?
Yeah. In fact, it kind of caught fire a lot more than we thought it would. We started, you know, a lot of the bowl directors and the PR people would reach out to us, finding out that we were coming to the game. And we had one of our, we called him the Tweet Monkey. He was busy on Twitter all day long, just reaching out to people and having fun with that. And so a lot of them would call and say, hey, we've got tickets for you guys, or we'd like you to come to the VIP party. And they really embraced us and took us in. And we, you know, at the end of the day, we just, you know, we wanted to, you know, bring people in and enjoy the fact that not only we were doing this, but just enjoy the game, enjoy football.
Yeah. No doubt about that. Was there a fan base or any particular fan or fans that stick out to you as, my gosh, these folks are nuts in a good way, or these folks are nuts in a not so good way? Anybody come to mind?
Well, we had a lot of fun with the Marshall group, and that was, I believe that was in Tampa. I want to say it was a Gasparilla Bowl. I'm not 100% sure.
Can I just say it? When folks in West Virginia get out of West Virginia, they go crazy.
Yeah. you know, like I said, I think the Marshall people stand out just because we had such a great time with them. They kind of brought us in and we tailgated with them before the game. We tried to keep, you know, kind of neutral as fans, but we couldn't help rooting for Marshall during that game. But yeah, a lot of the fans that, Alcorn State fans are pretty crazy. They love their football. So that was another fun game. But yeah, it was interesting to see the different, like you said, and the different regions, and they do go a little crazy for their football.
You mentioned Alcorn State. I'm assuming their band was there.
Oh yeah, and we made sure we stayed for
yes.
that.
Yes. Yeah, you led me right into this because, you know, all of you went to USC, and so did I, and SC has one of the finest bands in the United States. Depending upon what group of fans you talk to, there's a group of bands that are just above everybody else at the FBS schools, USC, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, and so I'm leaving some out. But Alcorn State's band, I want to get your impressions on it. They can play with anybody.
Oh yeah, we're standing there, and in fact, you know, one of the guys said, hey, we got to get a jump on the next game, and we all looked at each other and we said, man, listen, you know, we're college football fans, and we know how this band, the reputation of this band at Alcorn State, we got to stay here, and we're glad we did, man. They were rocking the house, and people were just going absolutely crazy. So we're happy we waited that extra 20 minutes before we left.
We're talking with Brian Richardson, he of the Bullmageddon Gang. Did you have any hiccups in terms of flat tires, car problems? You had to, you know, a plane didn't show up and so on. Anything like that?
Well, it's a funny story. We did get a flat tire literally right when we left the airport in Florida. I think it was Miami. And this was probably the luckiest break we had the entire trip. A guy flagged us down, pulled us over. We thought he was, he was flagging us down for Bullmageddon because we had the magnets on the side of the car already. And he told us we had a flat tire. We looked to the right, 20 feet to the right was a Goodyear tire place. So we just literally pulled in 15 feet, left the car there, went and got lunch, got the tire fixed, and we're on our way to the next game. It was pretty funny.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned, and I don't want to go too inside baseball here, but you mentioned Scott, your driver. who was going 109. And, of course, he is the nephew of one of our owners. And that kind of, let's just call it driving prowess, seems to be a family thing with them.
Is that right? Well,
yeah,
boy, it sure scared us.
Yeah. Well, I'll just leave it at that.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, because I know he's listening, and that's as far as I'm going to go with it.
Well, I was going to say that's 109 miles per hour in the rain, face-timing at the same time. So we've got a couple of elements there added to the speed.
How many places that you went when people started to catch on to what you were doing? How many times did people just want to buy you beverages or food or have you stop at the house or come on and join our tailgate, that kind of thing?
You know, it as we got momentum, like in the middle of the trip, it happened quite frequently. We'd go into like local, and again, you know, we try to make food a big part of it. I think I mentioned that at the beginning. You know, just kind of the local, you know, the local cool spots we'd go to, and we started, you know, kids or people there were like, hey, the Bowmageddon guys, and they take our picture with us. And a lot of that happened when we got a spot on at the New Orleans Bowl. They put us on national TV, and we heard from probably 100 of our friends, you know, via text, hey, I just saw you guys on TV. And our response to each other was, I can't believe these guys are watching this game.
That's fantastic. Folks, so you can email me, as Christina did. You can email me, cgp@940espnfresno.com. Christina asks, did the canceled games ruin their Guinness record attempt?
No. We still got credit. The game actually played for a few minutes before it was canceled. So no, it did account for the Guinness book. And we have heard probably three quarters of the way through our trip that there was a current record of 10. So we've already beat that record. So all these games are kind of gravy.
Yeah, you wiped that one out completely. How difficult was it? This might sound like an odd question, but how difficult was it to pack? Because you're at games in Florida. You went to games in Arizona, but you also, you were scheduled to go to a game the day after Christmas in Minnesota, and as well as one in New Hampshire. Were you not?
Yeah, I think the New Hampshire, we definitely did not go to New Hampshire, but your packing question is a good one, because you're right. We had a couple games where we wore shorts. Mike Arnold, you know, he wears shorts in 20 degree weather. He's one of our guys. And then we have Toyo, who's from Kauai. We call him the mayor of Kauai. He wears flip-flops in any weather, never took them off. So those guys packed rather easily. The rest of us were, you know, planned a little bit better with some warm and some clothes, cold clothes.
So is tonight, what number is tonight? Is tonight 15, 14, 16, 18?
Yeah,
where are you
tonight
at?
Tonight is 15, and we are debating whether or not to go to the Senior Bowl in Alabama, which would be 16. That's still in talks. So right now we've already crushed the record pretty well, but we're thinking we may want to add one more. But then again, you know, there's always next year if the Trojans don't make a bowl game. We want to be able to beat our own record.
Well, before I forget, I'm going to extend an invitation to you and the boys right now for our Game Day Live 2-hour pregame show. I suspect that we will be down at the Coliseum. As you know, Fresno State comes in for Fresno State for the Bulldogs' first game, and that'll be a lot of fun. So I just want to put that in your back burner that you'll, assuming we go down there, you'll certainly have an invitation to come join us for a segment up on stage.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. I'm looking forward to that game. Well, as a Trojan, I'm not looking forward to that game because the Bulldogs are looking tough these days. So
yeah,
I'm a little weary
tough
of that one.
Yeah, well, as well you should be. I just, because, you know, I get to see them week in and week out, and they are tough. Last thing for you, what's your sense about tonight? Clemson, Alabama. We had one of our team in the stadium saying there's a lot more Clemson fans in there than Alabama. When I was at Media Day, I've been here since Friday, when I was at Media Day, on Saturday, there were a lot more Alabama fans and Clemson fans. What's your take about the fan makeup, and who do you like tonight?
I have seen a lot of Clemson fans, and maybe it's just the orange sticks out, but there seems to be a lot more. On the flight over here, I was telling an Alabama fan, I said, I honestly think Alabama's going to win this handily. I mean, maybe not handily, but maybe a couple touchdowns. I said, if Clemson had Deshaun Watson, I might feel a little different, but I just feel that Alabama's got too much firepower.
Folks, he's Brian Richardson, part of the Bowlmageddon gang. What a great thing. They set the Guinness World Record for the most bowls in a certain period of time, a short period of time. Brian, listen, enjoy yourself tonight. It should be a great game, and we'll be in touch in the future for sure.
Christopher, thanks for having me on. We really enjoy your show, and I look forward to seeing you.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. That's Brian Richardson from Bowlmageddon. What a cool thing. One more segment this hour. We're going to let you hear a little bit of my chat at Media Day with the wonderful sideline reporter from ESPN and ABC, Holly Rowe. This is the CGP live from the National Championship.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Coming up at 4:05, ESPN Insider. The best in the business in covering national college football, or college football on the national level, Adam Rittenberg. He's at the coaches' convention down in Texas. I believe he's in San Antonio. One of the other people that I had a chance to talk with at Media Day on Saturday, one of my favorite people in this business. She is just fantastic, the work that she does. You see her all the time on the sidelines for both ESPN and ABC. Here's a couple of minutes with Holly Rowe.
Reporters, Holly Rowe from ESPN. The question that I've always wanted to ask you is, what is the hardest part of your job on the sideline?
Oh, I would say thinking on your feet, because you never know what's going to happen in the course of a game. So you're preparing for 100 possibilities and maybe 20 happen, and so you're like, did I prepare for the right 20, right? So I think just being able to think on your feet, hey, this happened, how can I report about it, and just being creative with what you're looking for.
Is it ever a tense moment when you're trying to grab one of the coaches going off field? I remember all the days of Lloyd Carr.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So Lloyd Carr and I have had plenty of awkward interviews, but this is a cute story. Christmas Eve a few years ago, I get a call on my home phone, and no one ever calls my home phone. And it's just like, hello, Holly, this is Coach Carr. I just wanted to tell you I miss you and thank you for all you do for college football. And I was like, it made my whole day. So I was like, that, you know, you are building good relationships. Even if they're intense moments, you know, there's a high level of respect there.
Last thing for you, on a personal note, I follow you on Twitter. You posted the note that your son, it was very moving, and I just wanted to get your reaction to that.
Yes, so my son is a notoriously terrible gift giver, and this year he gave me the best gift he's ever given me. He just wrote me a letter about, I'm going to cry if you make me talk about this, about how inspirational I've been to him. And, you know, as a parent, you never feel like you're inspiring your kids, but you hope to. And so for him to tell me how much I meant to him and how he looks up to me, and then he was also encouraging me to, like, get in shape for the new year, and he was giving me exercises, and, like, he wants his mom to still be around and be strong. So it was the best gift ever, and I just had to share it because I was like, this is so cute.
Yeah, she got a little emotional there. Of course, Holly Rowe, her story is very well known, cancer survivor, and she is very healthy again. We're happy for that, for her family. And she does such great work. She'll be on the Clemson sideline tonight for ESPN Radio. She'll be giving Sean McDonough and the boys up in the booth what's happening on the Tigers sideline. She posted a picture, which we retweeted from her Twitter, from the Clemson locker room. And what both locker rooms have done here is they essentially personalized the outer walls with signs or slogans or rallying cries that you'll find at Death Valley in Clemson or at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa. And outside the locker room at Levi's Stadium, outside the Clemson locker room, it says, "Dear old Clemson, we will triumph and with all our might." And she posted a great picture also of Dabo Swinney, head coach Dabo Swinney, getting a hug from his mom. Good stuff all the way around. And looking at the stands even right there, all you see is a Clemson in the background. But again, it's early yet. The kickoff is not for another hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. All right, 1 hour of our national championship show here in San Jose. leading into the game in Santa Clara is in the books. Coming up next, we're going to talk with our good friend, National College Football Insider for ESPN. His name, Adam Rittenberg. My name, Christopher Gabriel. This is the CGP.
The studios of 940 ESPN in Fresno, California. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Hour number two, CGP Live from the College Football National Championship. We are in downtown San Jose, 4.1 miles away from Levi's Stadium, where Clemson and Alabama will get it going. A shorter show today, obviously, because 5 o'clock will pick up ESPN radio coverage. Game is being called tonight by a gentleman I spoke to earlier today, Sean McDonough. He'll hear from him later this hour. Hour two does begin right now, 5 minutes, 18 seconds past the hour of 4 p.m. One of the individuals who does as good a job as anybody and better than most covering college football is a guy I love having on this program, and he probably felt like I did yesterday when the ball from Parkey hit the upright, the crossbar, and fell on the wrong side of the crossbar as the Bears lost. Our good friend Adam Rittenberg. Adam, welcome back to the program, my friend. Your thoughts on the Bears' disaster yesterday?
Oh, it's brutal. I mean, I just can't believe it's over so quickly. And that's the beauty and the cruelty of football, is that it can come down to a play like that. And obviously, it's kind of been the story of the season for Parkey. And it's just rough. I'm not in Chicago right now. I'm kind of glad I'm not there, because it would be a pretty depressing place to be today.
You're at the coaches' convention. You're in San Antonio, are you not?
Yes.
All right. The first thing that immediately pops to mind is Manny Diaz. He leaves Miami. He goes up to Temple, and he's there for basically about 18 days. He's there for the three-day signing period. The speech was very passionate, as you would expect. And then, lo and behold, Mark Richt retires. I don't know if anybody saw that coming or if he knew what was going on, but then Manny Diaz goes back to Miami. But that wasn't enough. No, now we have Cliff Kingsbury, who goes to USC as the offensive coordinator, and now he's interviewing with the Jets, and he may leave SC. Can you recall anything like this where two guys sign on and then they both may be gone inside of a month and a half?
Yeah, it does happen from time to time. Probably not as high profile as certainly a head coach going from one college job to another. I've seen this happen with assistant coaches from college to college, and probably sometimes from college to pro. But Cliff Kingsbury, if you remember, there was a delay in his hiring at USC. I think because he was gauging where he would be on the market in the NFL, and he finally did agree to become the offensive coordinator there. But I think this is always the ultimate possible destination, the long game of sorts for Cliff Kingsbury, was to be in the NFL. And if he can obviously land a head coaching job, much like with Manny Diaz, you can't plan out the timing of your career. And if this is the timing for, it would be unprecedented for a fired college coach to become an NFL head coach in the same year. You got to take that job. But if he doesn't get these jobs, I think there's still a decent chance that Cliff is back at USC. But I do believe in the near future, whether it's the 2019 season or the 2020 season, Cliff Kingsbury is going to be in the NFL. I think that's his ultimate destination.
Boy, if you're a USC fan, it's got to be frustrating, at least on some level, don't
yeah.
you think? I mean, because you're excited. The Trojans have been down just a bit. Well, at least this year, they were down. And then Kingsbury comes in, and if you're an SC fan, you're thinking, we're going to be lighting it up. The scoreboard's going to be on fire just below the Olympic torch there, and then this happens.
Yeah, it's very disappointing and at least frustrating for the time being for USC, because, like you said, there was great excitement. There were certainly mixed feelings when the school announced that Clay Helton would be returning as the head coach, but then you bring in Cliff Kingsbury with the recent track record of quarterbacks that he's had, whether it's Pat Mahomes or Baker Mayfield was way back in his past, but also Davis Webb. He's had Cliff Kingsbury can develop quarterbacks, and that's what USC needs right now with JT Daniels. And for him to possibly leave, I was talking with coaches about this today in San Antonio, whoever replaces him, if it does come to that, is going to be deemed a disappointment, even if that's a really good coach. I mean, I've talked to some folks here about possibilities if Cliff does not return, and there's some really good coaches out there, but whoever it's going to be, unless it's some bigger name than Cliff Kingsbury, realistically, I don't think that's going to happen. That person is going to be seen as a disappointment, even though it's probably not fair to describe them as that.
Greg Schiano at Ohio State, but while he's been there, he hadn't really been on the radar, per se, until the whole Tennessee coaching fiasco happened. And then, for better or for worse, depending upon what your view was, Greg Schiano was out there. Is he now in or out at Ohio State? And if he's out, is he on his way to the NFL?
Right. Well, he's not going to be back at Ohio State, but that was okay. A fairly well-known thing for a few weeks. And Greg Schiano, again, probably stayed a little longer than anyone thought he would when he got to Ohio State. A lot of people thought he'd be there a maximum of 2 seasons, and it's been 3 seasons. And I don't think he was coming back as defensive coordinator. They've announced now their co-coordinators, very interesting hires. Obviously, Greg Madison being one of them, from Michigan, voluntarily going to Ohio State. So Greg Schiano won't be back with the Buckeyes. I think there's a decent chance, a better than decent chance, that he ends up in the NFL next year, possibly with a team like the New England Patriots. He's got a very close relationship with Bill Belichick, and I know Brian Flores, their defensive coordinator, is on the radar for some head coaching jobs, so I could certainly see him on the staff there with the Patriots or another NFL team or another college team. It's all on the table for Greg Schiano, but certainly when you think about a guy that was going to get the Tennessee job and then it blows up and now he's out at Ohio State and going to be going somewhere else. It's certainly been a bit of a tumultuous period for a coach who is very well regarded in the business.
My guest is Adam Rittenberg, somebody who is very well regarded in media. National College Football Insider at ESPN, ESPN Plus. You hear him on Sirius XM on College Sports, part of the Campus Conversation podcast. He is at the Coaches Convention in San Antonio. I noticed that Notre Dame Fighting Irish Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick said yesterday that in lieu of playing in a conference championship game, that Notre Dame would be very happy to add a 13th game to their schedule if the NCAA would allow it. A couple things come to mind. Number one, is that something you foresee the NCAA allowing? Number two, I don't know that necessarily, unless, depending upon the opponent, Adam, I don't know that approximates the 13th game for programs like Alabama, Oklahoma, and so on when you're talking about a conference championship game.
Well, yeah, I mean, not all conference championship games are created equal. It would be very easy to see what this 13th game would be because, Notre Dame does play, I think, a very competitive national schedule, but they also play teams that they never used to historically play, teams like Ball State or Bowling Green next year. So is it going to be a game like that where you're basically making a 13th game to make more money with a home game, or is it going to be a really challenging game that can impress the committee? That's what we don't know. There obviously have been waivers for teams that play Hawaii to play a 13th game, but it would be interesting to see if it's granted for Notre Dame because of it's a unique circumstance. I honestly believe, and I know every year is different, Christopher, but I believe after this year, I don't see Notre Dame making the playoff with a loss. So I think they're going to have to run the table, whether it's 12-0 or 13-0 or whatever number of games they play, and hope that that's enough to get into the playoff because I think there'll be very few years. Last year would have been one of them, most likely, but I don't think it's a guarantee that they'll ever get in with a loss.
Yeah, I realize that this is a question that already has a built-in answer now until the end of time, but I'm going to ask you anyway because you're as dialed in as anybody. Given what you just said, Adam, would it ever behoove Notre Dame? I mean, they play a great schedule. Nobody will ever criticize their schedule. But would it ever behoove Notre Dame to join the rest of their teams, meaning at Notre Dame, and join the ACC?
I don't see it. It's just so much a part of their identity that, for their fans, being independent is always going to mean more in some ways than anything else. And, certainly people can criticize that or not understand that, but you know, from being around the program, it really means everything to Notre Dame to maintain that independence. So unless they're really forced into it, and it would, you know, cause honestly be a year like this where they tried to schedule a competitive national schedule and ran the table, and let's say they were left out. It would have to take something like that for them to, you know, maybe for a few times like that for them to honestly consider joining a conference, because it would limit them tremendously from who they want to play year in and year out. I mean, this is a program that plays Stanford and USC every year. It's a program that plays Navy every year. It's a program that wants to play a Big Ten team. Now they have Georgia on the schedule next year on the road. So that's who they want to be, and I don't think they're ever going to get away from that. And I guess I struggle with the people who feel like they have to. You know, you can certainly criticize Notre Dame or critique them and say, you know what, they should be in or they should be out based on these factors and the schedule that they play and the fact that this team played a more competitive conference championship than them. But if they want to be independent, let them be independent. That's who they've always been, and for the most part, it's worked out very well for them.
Adam Rittenberg is my guest. A couple more questions for Mr. Rittenberg. He's down at the coaches' convention in Texas. One more coaching question for you before we talk about Clemson, Alabama. Tennessee has gone past the 40-day mark trying to find an offensive coordinator. Is this a bad look for Tennessee? Does it heighten the pressure for Jeremy Pruitt to come up with an absolute bombshell hire?
It absolutely is a bad look for them. I'm very interested to see how this resolves itself because it has been so long. You know, they lost Tyson Helton to Western Kentucky as a new head coach. It happened very quickly. Jeremy Pruitt's talked to Kendall Briles. He's talked to Jeff Lebby. He's talked to all sorts of candidates for that job. Matt Canada, and Steve Sarkisian. You know, there's some internal candidates. And, you know, here we are, recruiting's about to start up again, and they don't know who's going to be in charge of their offense. So it certainly could work out, and they were an improved offense this year from last year, at least at the quarterback position. But it's not a very good look for a guy that, you know, got this job kind of through the back door after everything, like we were saying a minute ago, with Schiano fell apart and all those other candidates fell apart. And here's a career defensive coach who's having a very hard time hiring an offensive coordinator. So it's not a good look, but it certainly could always work out in their favor.
Adam, the game tonight, Alabama and Clemson, just up the road from where we're sitting right now. There's so many different ways to analyze this game. One of the parts of this game that I see is the game as great a player as Trevor Lawrence is? And I've said to you, I think that this is a young man who could conceivably rewrite the record book at Clemson by the time he's done, if he stays 4 years. Is the game, from you watching Trevor Lawrence this year, is the game going to be too big for him, or do you believe he is ready to take this game, this team, this moment?
Well, I think if he's protected, he has a chance. I think he's a generational-type talent, obviously well beyond his years as far as the way he's performing. But Clemson's offensive line couldn't block these guys last year, Christopher. I was there in New Orleans, and Kelly Bryant didn't do a whole lot to help, but he didn't have a whole lot of a chance to impact that game positively. And so I think it really comes down to the protection, because Clemson has weapons to attack Alabama. Alabama still is fairly young in the secondary. Clemson has multiple options, including Hunter Renfro, who's obviously been big in this game over the years. So I think he can. The answer is he can. But if he is under constant pressure, the data shows that he's not a, like many quarterbacks, he's not a great quarterback under pressure. And I think if he is harassed tonight by Quinnen Williams and Raekwon Davis and whoever else Alabama is bringing on their pass rush, it could be a long night for Clemson.
Folks, he's Adam Rittenberg. We love having him on this program. National College Football Insider at ESPN. Campus Conversation is the podcast. Adam, enjoy yourself down in San Antonio. Safe travel back to Chicago. Thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes out of your evening there to join us here in San Jose.
Yeah, you bet, Christopher. Enjoy the game tonight. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there you go. Adam Rittenberg. We love having him on. All right, coming up, we've got so much coming your way. It's nonstop. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Special edition of the CGP live from downtown San Jose at Audio Avenue, 4 miles from Levi's Stadium, national championship game, Clemson and Alabama. one of the individuals I had a chance to talk to earlier this morning, one of the greatest players to ever come out of Tuscaloosa, running back Sean Alexander. He was a first-round draft choice. He was in the all-decade team going back to 2000. Certainly made his mark with the Seattle Seahawks, MVP of the National Football League in 2005. This was my conversation with Mr. Sean Alexander.
I am with one of the great football players to ever come out of the University of Alabama. I'm glad that I have a list in front of me of all his accomplishments. He's Sean Alexander. Nice to meet you, my friend.
Brother, it's good. How are you doing?
Doing real well. Let me just read a couple of these things off here. 1999, first team All-American. 2000 NFL draft choice. You were a first-round 19th pick in that with Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
The All-Decade team, three-time Pro Bowler, MVP in 2005. Alabama Hall of Fame, SEC Hall of Fame, first player in 2007 to be featured on both covers of Madden NFL and NCAA football games. Do you have anything that's a favorite in here?
Yeah, that's like the kid credit. You know, I still remember my little nephew. He's like, oh, man, you've been on the cover of the video game? Oh, you was on Madden? Oh, I guess you was pretty good. I'm like, oh, dang. All right. You know, I was like, you saw me play games when I was in college. He was like, yeah, but I was 5. I didn't really know. I was like, okay. Yeah, well, you saw me win the MVP. Like, yeah, but I was 12. I didn't know. I was like, okay. Right. But you on cover of Madden? Now you're somebody.
Now that's serious.
I'm like, okay. All right. Well, thank you. You know,
there's a lot of stuff I want to get to in a short amount of time. First, how did the Sean Alexander Award for Outstanding Freshman Football Player? How did that come about?
You know, the FWAA, they were sitting around. They already do the Gursky, which right. They do the Outland Best Player, Best Defensive Player. They do the Ray Guy Punter. They do the Eddie Robinson Coach of the Year. They already did the freshman All-American team, and they asked me to come be a part of it last year to help pick out the freshman All-American team. And they said, yeah, we were thinking about naming the freshman player of the year. We wanted a guy with that had just raw talent as a freshman. We all saw it. A guy with some great character we could trust, put his name on it. They wanted a guy that would be an ambassador to the school and even college football, and we wanted a guy that would eventually be in the pros. That's how we want they were. And I was thinking, okay, good. I was like, yeah, so you want me to help you all find the guy? And they were like, you are the guy. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And so it was like a surreal, unbelievable, humbling feeling to know, like, you know, as I've been doing the banquets today, you know, I was with Eddie Robinson's grandson giving out the Eddie Robinson Award. And I'm like, wow, like my son's son, you know, could be giving out this award, you know. It's a surreal thing. But they picked me, and we decided we were going to give out three types of awards. So we give out the Inspirational Player of the Year, and we gave that to Adrian Martinez.
Let me tell you about him. He is from Clovis West High School.
Okay.
Which is where my on-site producer here, Vivian, went.
Okay.
My daughter goes to Clovis West. It's like 3 or 4 miles from where we broadcast from. So very excited seeing Adrian on there.
Yeah, well, we hear Adrian's story, and we were just impressed. You know, mom dying at 10.
Yes.
You know, Tanner's a labrum and senior, pressing on, going around. Scott Frost loves him. You know, Scott and I got inducted in the Orange Bowl Hall of Fame earlier this year. And he's just like, I got a great one here. And we're like, we got to give him an award to get hurt at the beginning of the season at big-time college football like Nebraska, still persevere, put up big numbers. You know, so he was a great inaugural inspirational freshman player of the year for us. And then you get the breakout performance, you know, and we always laugh because, you know, everybody says to me, oh, Sean Alexander, I remember that LSU game in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, that was exciting. It was my first time playing on ESPN and night game. And I just thought, ooh, if I get on the field, I'm just going to do something special, make my mom proud. Because I know they're watching. And, you know, some of us didn't have the, you know, it's not TV, it's not like it is now, but not everybody even had cable. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so if you ever got, everybody's going to go to watch the old TV set. You know, like it's old stuff like that. I'm like right on the verge before it was so easy to watch everything. And so that game was always special, and I went to go find a special freshman that had that breakout performance where people say, did you ever see that game? And so, you know, you take Rondo Moore in that Ohio State game. You know, he's at Purdue, mm-hmm. the Purdue wide receiver. He had that Ohio State game, and everybody's like, oh, you remember that catch he took? And
it's
he
a
broke
monster
it.
Game.
It was unbelievable. Over 200 yards, touchdowns, and they upset.
Well, I didn't do anything with him.
It was crazy. So he's the inspirational, or he's the freshman breakout performance of the year. And then, of course, you know, the Sean Alexander freshman player of the year is the player that they want it. You know, it's you know, talent is just, you know, you can't deny it. Character, an ambassador for your school, you know, and also college football, and a person that you think could be a future legend. And we're like, man, that's Trevor Lawrence, you know. Right. And so Trevor of Clemson, he won it. And it's really funny because, you know, we give out three awards. You get you know, Rondell, who went to my high school's rival, you know, Louisville Trinity, you know, from Lexington, Kentucky, or Louisville, Kentucky, and then you get Trevor Lawrence, who's playing against my band with the National. I was like, hold on, this is humbling, but honoring at the same time. I don't know what to say, but we're really excited. We think we've picked three great guys, and we definitely know that we got the guy that I would want to embrace my name in Trevor Lawrence. And
my guest is the great Sean Alexander. You saw him in the NFL for years. You saw him at Alabama. Go back to your college days. What was the hardest place for you to play at?
Well, you know, back then, it was hard to play in Tennessee and in Florida. Both
Neyland
of them had,
and the Swamp.
You know, Spurrier had them boys playing. Yeah. And, you know, it was like they had like a 6-year win streak. You know, it did get broken by them Crimson Tide. But but that us beating them there my senior year was special. You know, I never beat Tennessee.
And Phil Fulmer's
days. Yeah, Phil Fulmer. Yeah. And T. Martin was there. Peyton was there at the beginning of my college career. And, you know, so it was hard to beat them in Tennessee. You know, Auburn, our school had never beat Auburn in Auburn until my senior year. And so that was the SEC was just a rough place to go back in the day. It was hard to win on the road.
What was it like for you? How loud was it when you guys would go to LSU?
Yeah. And so LSU was always interesting because we had some streak where we had not lost in LSU for such a long time. So we felt like we had a mental edge on them. It'd be loud, but one play could kind of make them be like, ooh, maybe, we don't know, you know. And we use that to our advantage. You know, my freshman year was the first time down there, and I had that big freshman night, that breakout performance night. But my junior year, it was a game. We were losing the whole game. And Andrew Zau was our quarterback, and he fakes it to me, throws it to me down the sideline. We score a touchdown. We onside it, and Adam Cox, one of our sophomore linebackers, tips the ball over the guy's head, and we somehow recover it. We throw a slant and go, and Quincy Jackson, our senior receiver, catches it for a touchdown. We're like, did we just beat them? There's no way. We should have came back down 12 with 2 minutes, and we beat them, you know. But there was like a mental edge on them, and it was almost like if we could do anything to spark, we got them. And it went well.
Two more quick things for you, Sean. In the NFL, who did you love to lay a hit on when you were bringing that ball through the line, around the side? Who did you love to see and just, I'm going to initiate some contact right now and let him know that I'm here?
Oh, man. You know, I played against some great, great players. You know, my buddy Ray Lewis was always special to go against. He was one of the best tacklers. I mean, he would hit you, but he was one of the best tacklers. He would just say, be so patient, because I was one of those guys that would take advantage of your aggression and cut back on you. But he was me. But, you know, for me, I loved chip blocking. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If I was going to catch one of those defensive ends not coming up the field and knock him back on.
Days you get a penalty for that. I mean, just
yeah, it's kind of wild. Yeah, we got all kind of rules. You know? We're protecting everybody from being
that's
violent.
Right.
It's a violent sport. I don't know what's going on. But it was amazing. But there was no one guy. There was just teams that I looked at and I said, you know what? I will be unstoppable tonight. I'm going to force my will. And that's stuff that we got from my high school in Boone County. Then go to Alabama, gets amplified, and I wanted to bring that to Seattle, and you know, it was a sweet thing to go to Seattle, 25 years, three playoffs, and then me be there for 8, and us go 5 years in a row.
when you played, I mean, it just always looked like you were, I'll use the phrase, assumed the sale. You looked like you were going to go to the house every time you got the ball.
Yeah. You know, I had great coaches, you know, Ivy Williams when I was in Alabama, and I had John Alford when I was at Boone County High School, and then I get to the pros, and I had Ricky Waters. He was a legend that's there with me, and you know, it's funny that Stump Mitchell was probably the best runner. He was the running back whisperer. Every running back he's ever had, they do great. But it was just one of those things where I had the freedom to go be better at my craft, you know?
Yeah.
And they were like, they didn't say, hey, you need to go run like this. They're like, Sean, You're way faster than what everybody knows. You're a very smooth runner. You play the cutback game. So I have people always think I'm cutting back so much that they would stay on their blocks. They'd be like, it looks like all your high school, college, and pro. It looks like you just had the greatest lines all the time. And I'm like, well, really, I cut back well, and I cut back good enough to make people say, ooh, I can't leave my man or my lane, because if I do, so I'd run straight. And they'd be like, what? Is your line just killing everybody? I'm like, it is, but I understood defensive schemes. You know what I mean? If you run and you cut back, you can't go leave to go get in the A gap, because I'll be in the B gap. And it just worked well for me.
We're with Sean Alexander, of course, the Sean Alexander Award for Outstanding Freshman Football Player. Three awards given out: Inspirational Freshman of the Year, Adrian Martinez from Fresno, from Clovis West High School, of course, at Nebraska. Freshman Breakout Performance, Rondale Moore at Purdue, and the Freshman Player of the Year, Trevor Lawrence, Clemson. Last thing for you, Sean. I know who you're picking tonight. Why is Alabama going to win?
You know, I just think that our offense is just amazing. Our defense is just good enough, you know. And at the end of the day, when you have that happen, you know, we still score pretty well. We even we call off the dogs, you know what I mean? We still, you know, oh, we need to score again. Boom, boom, boom. And we, you know, that's what we're so proud of, too. We still run the ball. We're a running team. And we're just physical. We run the ball. We stop the run. That's what we do. It's just that with Tua, he takes a normal first and 10, 6 yard out, and pump fakes that and throws a post for 30 and switches the field every game, you know? And so when you have a player like that, it feels like it's fun and gun, but that's just because no one's ever seen Bama throw it like that. But we're still throwing the ball about 20-something times a game, and it's just that Tua, instead of going 18 for 24, he's doing it like 24 for 27. You know, and it's
he's
just
ridiculous.
Like, it's like, yeah, we have not really changed the offense. If you slow down and you think, have you changed the offense? The answer is no. It's just that we have somebody special being the captain.
He's Sean Alexander. Thanks for stopping by, man.
Yep, roll tide.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
A little bit more for you before we send you over to ESPN Radio. The call again tonight's going to be Sean McDonough. You're going to hear from Sean to end the program today. We're not going to be able to get to Bonnie Bernstein, but I want you to hear what she has to say later this week, because what we talked a great deal about is something that she is doing through the college football playoff to help raise money for all the victims of the Butte Fire. It's a really great thing, and we're just not going to be able to get to it today, but we're going to make sure that you hear it on Wednesday or Thursday. Who you are going to hear right now is really one of the greatest running backs who ever played college football. Just a remarkable player at Notre Dame, Rocket Ishmael. The guy was pure electricity, wasn't he? You'd see him when he was back to return a punt or a kickoff. You always had that feeling. Did I say running back receiver? Excuse me. Thank you. You always had that feeling that he was going to do something magical. Was it the Michigan game that he did that? He had that extended catch in the end zone for the Notre Dame win. I mean, the guy was just incredible. Well, he was just as electric today, and had a chance to talk with him, and here it is.
I am with one of the greatest running backs in the history of college football. This is a great thrill for me, and it's a Notre Dame guy, no less.
Man.
Rocket Ishmael, my man, good to see you.
Man, thank you, brother. It's great to be here.
Let's start with this. Being that I went to USC, what were those games like? Because we saw them from a distance. We saw them from the Coliseum, from Notre Dame Stadium. What was it like being on the inside of those?
So, first of all, everybody on the team always knew that the magnitudes of what both schools represented in college football, just the history of and the history of excellence in college football and being on the elite level in college football, everybody always knew that those games were going to be, we call them Sports Illustrated games, because back in the day, it wasn't very many magazine outlets that were significant across the country. There might have been some regional ones, but that was a game where you knew if you did well, you had a shot of being on the cover of a national magazine like Sports Illustrated.
Which was you.
Well, what my man, we had a couple of guys during my time, whether it was Tony Rice. I think for the SC game it was T. Rice. Rodney Pete, I think I saw him a couple of times. But so that was that. But here's a cool USC story. So at the end, you remember it was a guy back in the day named Bob Hope. You might remember him.
I'm older than you.
Okay.
I sure do.
All right, so you look good. a lot of people, I don't know if they still have that now, but it was like he had an All-American team.
Yeah.
And so around, I don't know if it was around like the winter break, Christmas break, New Year, somewhere around there, they would fly the All-American team out to is it Studio City?
Studio City.
The amusement park is there now.
There's Universal Studios.
Universal Studios. Yeah. Universal Studios.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Universal Studios. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
It was at Universal Studios, and we would go out there. We'd get there like the day before, kind of meet everybody, hang out. And then the next day, we'd be on television, and he would introduce us one by one, give a little quip, like a corny quip, then, you know, that would be it. The year I went, my freshman year, Mark Carrier, because he was a safety, all-world safety. He was the hometown guy, so it was his responsibility to, like, show us a good time. So I remember it was Mark Carrier, Chris Zorich, Todd Light, Michael Stonebreaker, Leroy Butler, and Emmett Smith and myself. And
a lot of familiar names.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so Mark, he had this Volkswagen Jetta, right?
No. Oh, man.
And so he's like, hey, there's a dance at school. Let's go down. So we all jump in his car.
Can we just tell people who don't know, the Jetta was teeny.
That's why I'm laughing.
Okay.
That thing, it literally should have fit a driver, a passenger seat, and two guys in the back. Like, at the most, all of us fit in that car. And since I was the smallest guy, I had to, like, lay across everybody's lap in the back feeling crazy. And we ended up going to USC's campus. And it was a dance at one of the halls or dorms or something.
Right.
And at the time, there was a dance called the Steve Martin. And EPMD was the rap group that had the video and the song to go with the dance. And I remember I was the man back in the day when it came to dances. So I spent half of the dance teaching everybody how to do it. And it was fun. It was a great time. And that's one of my fondest SC memories.
That's very cool. That is very cool. You know, what I remember, we were talking with Rocket Ishmael. I remember when we would go out to Notre Dame, what I always loved about the rivalry is that the tremendous respect between the two teams, between the coaching staffs. And as you said, both teams understood that history, whether it was Lou Holtz, John Robinson, everybody got that.
Man, let me tell you something. This is the other thing I remember to add to the significance of what you're talking about. Man, I remember, let's see, Todd was there. Rodney Pete was the quarterback my first year. And then my second and third year was Todd Marinovich. And man, I remember you guys always had a receiver that would have like 15, 16 catches, some double digit catches, high 100 yards in the game. It'd be like, what the heck? And then the defense always had like two or three like notable stars on it, and then you always had anyway, it was really nice. And we enjoyed it. And
I just remember Tony Rice and you running through us, around us, over us, everywhere.
No, man, let me tell you something. That was an anomaly for that time. But SC is definitely memorable to me. And check it out. Here's another SC connection I have. When I was with the Raiders, my wife and I were introduced by former SC quarterback Vince Evans.
Nice.
Because he was like, he was the vet on the team, and he was like the spiritual leader on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would take all of us wild young guys, try to corral us and be like, hey, get your life right, get everything together. And I remember he called me. I don't know if it was the off season or it was like a off week or something, and he called me and he was like, hey man, when you get back, I got somebody I want you to meet. And then the rest is history. We've been married 23 years, man, 4 children.
Congratulations.
So I got to give a shout out to SC for that too.
Right on. We're talking with Rocket Ishmael, one of the greatest running backs ever to play in the college game. When you look at the game today, how has, from your perspective as a lightning quick guy, how has the game changed? Is it just more of Rockets out there, or is it?
Oh my gosh, man. First of all, they have figured out a way. So at Notre Dame, we had tons of guys that were uber athletic and fast and quick and could catch. But it was like just kind of turn around and handing the ball off to them. and you have to account for the quarterback being able to do his thing as well. It seemed like we weren't able to utilize or maximize mm-hmm. everybody's gifts accordingly. And nowadays, it feels like with the versions of the spread that they have,
right.
where you can run it as effectively as you can pass it, and you can utilize all your weapons at different times during a drive, it feels like the game, the schemes and the I guess I'll call it the design or the technology behind the schemes now is better to be able to have the ability to use just multiple guys that are like ultra talented. So when I look at it like that's what comes to mind. And the fact that it's the safety component is even there's more awareness of that now, so that's a big deal. And also how they've implemented with especially like the big time programs, like the time that you dedicate to the sport. The time that they've said, okay, you can't have this much time, you can only allow it to this, they're doing a great job managing that as well.
Rocket Ishmael, we have 30 seconds left.
Okay.
Who do you like tonight, Bama or Clemson?
I like Bama, I'm going to say that. And because Clemson or any team that has a chance to beat Bama, you have to have like an elite level quarterback. And Clemson has an elite level quarterback, great defense, but I think it's going to be tough to beat Bama.
He is Rocket Ishmael, one of the favorites I've ever had a chance to watch play from Notre Dame or anywhere else. Thank you, sir, for coming by.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right.
So let me be real clear about something. I watched Rocket play his whole career. Of course he's a wide receiver and a kick returner. As Rocket sat down, Sean Alexander's walking through up, and I'm seeing him, and of course, you know, Sean Alexander was a beast of a running back at Alabama and the Seahawks. And so I'm looking at Rocket, I called him a running back twice, and he was just so gracious not to correct me, and I wish he would have. Let's just be clear. I went ahead and fined myself. Russ, please make a note of that. That's a $10 CGB fine. Really, it might require more at this point. All right, we've got one segment left, and we saved what we think would be a perfect segue for you. Sean McDonough, the great Sean McDonough, one of the wonderful, truly most wonderful play-by-play guys in the business today, and I think really ever. He's calling the game tonight, the Bama-Clemson game just up the road from here, on ESPN Radio. I spent about 7 or 8 minutes with Sean a little bit earlier today. That is up next. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
What a fun program. What a great group of individuals we had a chance to sit down and talk with a little bit earlier today, as well as on Media Day, getting a hold briefly of Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, and Tua Tagovailoa. Also, of course, Holly Rowe. And today, you know, Brian Richardson stopped by, of course, from Bullmageddon. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. Last one for you. I had a chance to sit down here with the guy who was going to be calling the game tonight and really one of the very best play-by-play guys there's ever been. A fellow Syracuse alum like our guy Paul Leffler. This is my chat with Sean McDonough.
I'm with Sean McDonough, one of the great broadcasters of our time. I'll go ahead and go the iconic route. Tim Brando put a tweet out the other day, and I was wondering how you felt about it. He said, in his time, in our time, you are the best play-by-play guy going. When you read something like that, when you hear something like that, how does it make you feel?
Well, I don't do Twitter, so it was texted to me by several people. And to be quite honest about it, it got me a little choked up. I have great respect for Tim. You know, we used to work together a very long time ago at ESPN, and, you know, he still, to me, is among the very best play-by-play people. Matter of fact, I had sent him a text earlier this season. I had an Oklahoma game I was preparing for, and he had Oklahoma the week before, so I was watching the tape of the game, and I just sent him a text about how much I appreciate the great rapport he has with Spencer Tillman and, you know, how hard he works at it, even with his standing in our business. You know, it's clear with the storytelling and everything that he works really hard for every game, which is what we're all supposed to do. So, you know, anytime it's something like that that's praise, it's appreciated very much. But coming from Tim, it really meant a lot to me.
Yeah, that's an interesting word you use, storytelling. We all do that in our business. You do it when you're doing play-by-play. I do it hosting my program. When you look at each individual game, Sean, do you have a story in your mind ahead of time, and then you know there's going to be peaks and valleys, and with that in mind, how do you ride the emotion of those peaks and valleys? Because you do it exceptionally well. You never you never go overboard when the situation doesn't warrant it.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, that's really our job, I think, is to kind of read the game situations. The storytelling really depends on how the game's going, and a really good example of why you have to be prepared and have as many stories as you can is the national semifinal that Todd and Holly and I had, and Tom Rinaldi, the Clemson-Notre Dame game. You know, you go into it hoping it's going to be a compelling game, but when it gets one-sided, you know, you're just not doing down-to-down football anymore. You need to humanize the people and tell stories and hopefully keep the viewer interested because the game isn't exciting at that moment. So that's why it's important. It's really why I enjoy college football as much as I do. There are so many great stories, the players and coaches, their backgrounds, how they got to where they are. And college football allows you more time to do that. In the NFL, it's pretty much down-to-down X and O football. You know, it's very rare you hear somebody talking about Tom Brady and, you know, what his hobbies are, how, where he grew up, or it just doesn't happen in the NFL. I don't know why. I mean, I'd like to hear more about Giselle and their family life or something like that. But it's, you know, it's just much more common in college football. So the preparation, the storytelling are always important, but particularly if the game starts to get one-sided.
My guest is Sean McDonough, a wonderful play-by-play man. You know him from so many calls. I'm curious if you have a favorite call. The one that I think of when I think of you, of many, is the Michigan-Michigan State game, the blocked punt.
Yeah, I get people imitating me a lot. You know, it's one of my many infamous or famous voice cracks, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, that one kind of came out of nowhere. You know, it was just so shocking. And I think, you know, people, students especially, who want to do this for a living, ask me all the time, oh, you know, how do you call a big play? And what's your mindset? I said, you don't have one. You know, you shouldn't have to sit there and think, well, this is a big play, so now I'm supposed to yell louder or sound more excited. It should all be natural and instinctive. And I think that's why some of play-by-play, a lot of play-by-play is hard to teach, because it really is feel and instinct and rhythm and, as you said, kind of leaving room to rise to, you know, if you start yelling on a 4-yard gain on the first play of the game, you don't leave yourself any place to go when something exciting really does happen. So, you know, false excitement, I think the viewers figure that out pretty fast too. But that was one of them, certainly. I have been lucky, you know, way back to 1992 and 93 when I was doing the baseball for CBS. You know, the Sid Bream, Francisco Cabrera Game 7 of the National League Championship Series. The next year, Joe Carter hit the home run for Toronto. You know, some great game. A lot more. We could sit here and probably talk all afternoon about it, but you know, if you're, it just means you're old. When you can list off a lot of things that were exciting, it just means you've been around long enough to be in the right place a few times.
One of the things, I talked with Nick Saban yesterday, or 2 days ago at Media Day, and I asked him about his position on the college football playoff. I know he's not in favor, but going beyond four, you cover as much as anybody. What's your position? Should it go beyond four, or is it a good system right now?
I think it should. I'm glad they went to the playoff. I was always a proponent of the playoff, and I've always thought eight. I mean, if they do 16 at other levels of college football and that works, there's no reason why eight couldn't work. You know, I think just about every year of this 5-year period now, there's always been the debate about, well, did they get the third or fourth teams right? Did five or six or seven kind of get the short end of the stick? You know, this year it was Georgia who felt like they should have gotten in. You know, I think their argument lost a little. You know, if you really felt that way, go out and play well in your bowl game. And clearly they were not engaged in that. We did that game against Texas. So I'd like to see eight. It gives a little more room for the UCFs of the world, perhaps get one of those teams in there year to year, give them a chance to make their point. I think it's one of the reasons why the NCAA tournament is probably the most popular sporting event in college athletics, because you do have the notion that the underdog has his chance, and every now and then they do knock off the big guy. So, yeah, I think eight would be great. It's not too big. It's manageable. Gives more people a realistic claim to have their chance. You know, I think if you're number nine and you get left out, well, too bad.
But there's always going to be somebody,
but number
right?
five, yeah. It was close enough, you know, with Georgia this year, you know, the Baylors and TCUs in years gone by, that you could make a compelling argument. I think eight would be great.
My guest is Sean McDonough. I'm with you. I think eight would be great as well. A lot of folks have this narrative going of Alabama-Clemson fatigue. As a college football fan, I think what you want is the two best teams,
right?
And they are the two best teams. When you hear that narrative, what is your mind immediately
think
of?
I'm fatigued by that argument.
Yeah. You know,
I have Alabama-Clemson fatigue from the argument about whether we should have fatigue or not. I know, I think they're the two best teams. That's what you should want. you know, there's always the opportunity for an upset along the way. You know, Notre Dame and Oklahoma had their shot. They didn't do it. You know, other teams, Georgia had their shot in the conference championship game. As much as they complained about not being one of the four, I mean, they had their shot at Alabama and had a two-touchdown lead and let it get away. So, no, I think they're the two best teams, and they clearly are. And we traveled around. We saw these teams multiple times, and we saw all the other top teams at least once in person. They look different. You know, Georgia physically, when you go to the practice, they are close, but they're young. 68% of their players are freshmen and sophomores. I think they're going to be in the mix here the next few years with Alabama and Clemson. But it's all about recruiting, and you know these two teams have recruited so well. That's why they've been here year after year.
Sean McDonough, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There you go. That was a great thrill, having a chance to talk to one of the best broadcasters in the business, period. Sean McDonough, what a great treat that was. Well, we've got about a minute left or so, and how do I see the game? Well, I've talked about it, you know, for the last week or so, or last few days in the program at least, going back to last week. What I see in this game is obviously the two best teams in college football. I think the difference in this game, or at least one of the differences in the game, will be how Trevor Lawrence handles the moment. Can he work with, in particular, Hunter Renfrow, who seems like he's been at Clemson for 15 years, and produce some big numbers? But in the end, I think the Alabama defense is going to do the job. I think they're just a little bit too tough. I'm rooting for Clemson, but I think that Alabama is going to beat them. I'm going to say 28-24. For Russ back at the station, for Vivian here, for all of you who have been tweeting and sending emails and what have you, and all of our tremendous guests, thank you for a great couple of hours hanging out together. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll see you on Wednesday. Until then, you're on your own.